This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed. This week, our podcast is brought to you by BHP. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the production of copper is critical. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements to help power their copper mine at Olympic Dam in South Australia. It's happening now at BHP. Visit bhp.com/critical to find out more. G'day, I'm Kate Watson, and this is News Club, the place to go for conversations about the news. If you gave News Club a listen this week, you'll know that we're deep on this beef between Meta and News, both here in Australia and around the world. Long story short, back in 2021, our government created a news media bargaining code, which meant that if Meta and Google didn't come to a deal to compensate publishers for news content, they would be forced to do so. What happened was private deals were done with some, especially big publishers like Nine and News Corp. So the code's never actually been used. But these deals are expiring. Meta has said they're not doing them anymore. So the government has to decide if they will designate them, which means the code will be enacted and they'll have to negotiate deals with publishers, or Meta might just vacate the space. This happened in Canada, and what it looks like is no news publishers on Instagram or Facebook. You could go to look for the Squiz and you would see a message saying, "This content is not available in Australia." It's a bit in the weeds of media, so why should you care? Well, for many, the argument is that news, how we get it, where we get it, our ability to access it is a vital part of a healthy, functioning democracy. Tim Duggan is the co-founder of several digital media ventures, most notably Junkee Media. He's worked in media, he's played this game. Importantly for this conversation though, Tim, you're the chair of the Digital Publishers Alliance, which is an industry body that represents over 150 titles from leading independent digital publishers, of which The Squiz is one. That's what you do, and we're going to get into all of that, but who are you?
My most recent LinkedIn description describes myself as an optimist who loves big ideas. And I think that's kind of almost the current distillation of who I am. I have been a journalist. I was a music journalist originally for Rolling Stone in my early 20s. I used to work in advertising agencies straight out of school. I went to the mailroom ad agency. Then I co-founded my first website, an LGBT community website called Same Same, with some friends of mine in 2006, very long time ago.
I want to say, was Facebook even a thing then?
No, it launched. Facebook launched in 2004 in universities in America. But when we first started creating content on the internet, we used to just encourage people to come to our homepage. And our job was to try and get inside the heads of our audience and try and get them to make our homepage their homepage, as in when you first opened up your MSN browser. Or
do you remember Ask Jeeves?
Ask Jeeves. Ask Jeeves was wonderful.
That was a thing for a while. And I think you've seen the life cycle of this then.
I really have. Yeah, I think. And a lot of digital publishers have. Digital publishing has been around for 15 to 20 years now in Australia. And most digital publishers, which is anyone who creates content for an audience primarily through digital means, it could be podcasting, it could be through video, it could be through words, have seen all of these different platforms come and go. But the two most dominant in our space are Google and Meta. And so Meta being the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. And what the ACCC did in 2019 was they did a lot of consultation of the industry at the time to try and look at what they called a power imbalance between these digital platforms and the media ecosystem. And they came to the conclusion that both Google and Meta were what they call unavoidable trading partners, which means if you wanted to create a media company in this day and age, you basically can't avoid these big digital platforms. They have become so large and so dominant. And so the News Media Bargaining Code, it was an imperfect law from the start. It was designed primarily for large publishers to extract money out of Meta and Google that was government sanctioned at the time with the previous government. It was a very imperfect law, but it had a noble aim, which was how can you readdress some of this imbalance? And now all of that is thrown up in the air because the imbalance has continued to be even more unbalanced, with Meta announcing recently that they were going to pull out of any future news funding agreements. And the likely outcome of that is that the government and Meta are going to go to war, and the potential casualties are smaller independent publishers, and the potential casualties also is Australian consumers, like everyone who's listening to this.
You said in an op-ed on this topic the following: it's not just the news industry that should be worried, it's the future of a functioning democratic society.
That statement sounds dramatic. And it sounds dramatic because whenever someone starts talking about the future of democracy, you sound like a politician. But in this case, it's actually true. What happens when you have entire people growing up that never get things fact-checked through their social platforms, or you suddenly realize one day, hold on a second, we're talking about this issue. I'd actually love to know what the ABC says about this issue. What does The Guardian say? What does The Squiz say? What does any trusted source say about this? And you might find a story, you go to The Squiz or you go to the ABC and you find a story you think that's interesting. You go to share it on Facebook or Instagram, and a notification will come up saying, you can no longer share this content because news has been banned in your country. And that is a genuine threat for democracy.
And you've articulated so well, Tim, why this actually isn't a conversation about whether publishers should be on Meta's platforms or should be using Google. The basic fact, as determined by the ACCC, our competition regulator, is that you can't actually have a viable media company without some sort of interaction with Meta or Google, and perhaps others, but that's a conversation for another day. You've done work with Meta, with Facebook at the time. You talked about working in partnership with Facebook and Facebook's positioning themselves years ago that they were for journalism and for news. How do you reflect on that now?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of reflecting on that, and it's been a little bit sad, personally. So in 2013, my friends and I, who we co-founded this business with, launched Junkie, which is a pop culture and news analysis site for young Australians. And we rode the algorithmic waves up to really high heights. So 2013 was around the time where globally a lot of media that were digital first all started a rise up. So BuzzFeed, Vice, Vox in America, Junkie in Australia, Pedestrian in Australia, we all had this huge momentum behind us, which was fueled in particularly by Facebook. So as Facebook grew and the audiences grew, we suddenly, as media brands, were able to expose our brand to an audience that was huger than we could ever imagine. And we rode that wave, and it was amazing. And it helped us reach and build really interesting businesses, media businesses. And during that process, Facebook really tied themselves up with the news industry. So Facebook launched an entire division called the Facebook Journalism Project, which had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of funding. They had staff all around the world. They had conferences. They gave money and funding to publishers everywhere, including Junkie, saying build daily video shows on Facebook, invest in journalists. We really viewed Facebook as our homepage. And that wasn't by accident. It was by design. That was what Facebook lured us into doing. Of course, it was voluntary for us. But when you have an unavoidable trading partner that has access to basically your audience, of course you're going to use them and you're going to go all in on that. So that happened with Facebook. And then a similar thing over the last 5 years or so has happened with Instagram, where Instagram has become another way of reaching audiences, and entire Instagram-first publishers like the Daily Oz, who are a great source of information for young Australians and another member of the DPA, have built really great, interesting businesses using Instagram as a default homepage. And so the reason why I've been reflecting on it recently, and it's been a little bit sad, and I wrote the op-ed, is because this relationship that the news media industry and Meta have had over a decade and a half has been really symbiotic. It's gone both ways. It has been testy at time and complicated. And essentially, this is Meta now saying we're completely breaking up with the news industry. And we've known that's been coming for a long time as media businesses. Most media businesses have been transitioning away from that. But to do it overnight and to give the threat that we're going to completely shut off these channels that most media businesses have spent a decade and a half investing time and energy into building is quite potentially devastating for especially small independent publishers.
And so I guess my question to you is why? Why do they, and let's put Google aside because that's a different case, why do Meta no longer care about news?
So Meta is a huge company with ambitious aims. And their original aim a few years ago was to build a metaverse until everyone realized that was a completely ridiculous idea and no one wanted to live in a metaverse despite the fact they changed their entire business name to Meta.
You can only laugh.
Yeah, the metaverse was one thing that Mark Zuckerberg tried to get us all into and everyone said no thanks. Then the rise of AI over the past couple of years, Meta have really thrown themselves into that instead of the metaverse now. So AI is their future and where they're putting all their money. So to them, they don't care about news. They only went along with it in Australia as a strategic decision in a small market to see what would happen. They did deals that lasted for about 3 years, and the Australian legislation was successful enough at the time that other countries have tried to do similar things. However, in Canada, where they tried to introduce it, the law was slightly different to the Australian one, which is based on the threat of designation. And Canada went straight through to doing the Canada Online News Act that just designated them straight up. And Meta's response there to a country of 40 million people was to completely ban news from being published on any of their platforms. So if you're a consumer in Canada right now, you just, your Facebook feed and your Instagram feed is full of influencers, your mum, dogs, and pets. And that's it. There's nothing else on there.
The line as well is kind of grey around what they would determine a news publisher to be and who they might block. And, you know, it's kind of the obvious question, but we don't really know the answer to that in a clear way as yet.
We don't. Will the Squiz be blocked? No one knows. Will the Daily Oz be blocked? No one knows. Will Junkie be blocked? Will the Sydney Morning Herald be blocked? Will a lifestyle publisher be blocked? We don't know. And part of that, I think, is Meta's design. They enjoy creating chaos. An example of that chaos was felt by Australians in early 2021 when Facebook and Instagram blocked news for Australians for about a week. However, at the time, that block was so broad that it blocked important information. It blocked police from getting information out about bushfires. It blocked businesses from promoting their business. So I think they enjoy, to be honest, some of the chaos and some of the not being really super clear on what the impact will be.
Tim, the challenge here is we asked our audience earlier in the week, would you care if there was no news on social media? And they said no. They said they would not care. There's a bit of nuance to that answer because we got hundreds and hundreds of comments as to why they said no. They said they don't trust news on social media. They said they want to source their news from a trusted place and they don't like the idea that it's being fed to them by an algorithm. This view is very real, but I guess it speaks to this idea that the reason they're saying no is not because they just want, you know, the kind of content you're talking about on their social feeds. It's because they don't trust Meta.
Yeah, and I think it is a lot more nuanced than do you want news on social media? Because most consumers, most people listening to this, don't really actively realize where their news sources are coming from. You might see a story and you might talk to somebody at the dinner table that night around something that happened and you might not really remember or realize, did I hear that on the radio this morning? Was that on the Squiz podcast? Was that a link that I saw on Facebook or was that a tweet that I saw? You just know that somewhere within your media diet, you heard that. And I have been there as news, as an information source, grew from, I remember the first year we did research on our audience in about 2013 or 2012, I think it was. And we asked them where they're getting the news from. And social media and Facebook started off as this tiny percentage. It was like, you know, a single digit percentage. And I watched that rise and rise and rise until at one stage when Facebook was at its peak, the percentage of our audience, which was young Australians who got their news from Facebook, was something like 3/4 of them. it was like 75%. And that has now been ingrained for a generation. So people don't really realize that's where news comes from. Mm. But as soon as you take that away, think of what happens on Facebook when an issue happens, like the photoshopping of Kate Middleton.
I knew we wouldn't get through this interview without talking about the conspiracy theories of Kate Middleton's absence from the public eye.
Yeah, the world is talking about it. But what will happen when you go and search for that and you want to share, oh my God, isn't this funny that this is happening, or look at her hand here, and you go to share that and it says, sorry, you can't share this. All because Meta is refusing to play ball with the Australian government and they're having the fight up here at this government level that's affecting consumers down here. So I really don't think that most people have actually considered what a world without news looks like. Mm. And that's the short term. And then the long term is not only the viability of these businesses and the breadth of independent publishing, which is really important in an ecosystem of a functioning democracy, but also the fact that generally, and most of the research that I've seen shows that people just won't seek news out. If news doesn't come to them, they will not seek news out in the same way.
That is the key point, I think. And I think a lot of squeezers who responded no to that are very literate media consumers who are actively seeking news, but the majority will not do that. And I also pose the question to the audience more than anything. It's not just about being able to present your news on these platforms. It's being able to find audiences and find people. So you may well say, well, take news off Facebook, off Instagram. That's fine. I'll go and find it. You might even not know where to find it. What would you type into Google? What would you actually look for when it comes to short form news content written in an agenda-free way? You wouldn't even know how to find the squeeze.
And the experience in Canada, so Canada is 9 months ahead of us. So this happened to them, yep. And we can look and see what happened. And what happened over there has been that big publishers have been fine. Everyone knows that the Sydney Morning Herald exists and I'll go there for news. Everyone knows to go to the Australian to find that piece of content. But the smaller and independent publishers that relied on these platforms to reach an audience and have spent 10 years building up hundreds of thousands of people on there, they're the ones who are affected. And they've had to lay off staff. They've had to, some of them had to shut down completely. So that's the future that we are looking at, where Australia, which already has one of the most concentrated levels of media ownership in the entire world, is only going to get more concentrated and make it harder for smaller independent publishers to be heard.
I've been building up to a very simple question, I think, but it might not be that simple to answer. Do you think Meta is inherently evil?
What a question.
We talk about it all the time.
Yeah. I don't believe that a business is inherently evil. What I think has the potential for evil is our overly capitalistic society, where the power and money goes all to the top and the end goal and the end game of business is profitability and survival and win at all costs. I think that is what is evil here. And I think what's happening in Meta is a manifestation of that. So it comes down from the society where Mark Zuckerberg wants to win. He wants to be a trillion-dollar company. He doesn't care what he kills in the process, doesn't care that in Australia consumers won't be able to see news or that 50 small publishers might find it really hard to survive over the next couple of years. That's all collateral damage in his effort to be bigger, be more successful, have more money, have more power. So I don't think that Meta by itself is evil. I think the system under which we operate is inherently flawed.
Interesting answer. It takes me to our second club pick on News Club this week, which was a podcast by Ricky Sutton. He's a media and tech guy. He's pretty deep on this stuff, but I think I characterized him as very practical in the podcast earlier in the week. He says publishers are in the fight of their life, and the only way through this is to think like them, think like big tech, think about the money, and also to have a look at what others are doing, Microsoft, Amazon. We haven't even talked about TikTok yet, and go to them with a proposition that's going to be compelling to them. I'm sure you have thoughts.
I have many thoughts.
you're collecting them. I can see your face. You're collecting them.
yes. I'm trying to figure out which ones I'm going to pull in here. And Ricky is a very smart man, and I've spent several phone calls with him in the last week or so as we try to figure out collectively how to best approach this. And I think his way of viewing the world is right when it comes to this. We're talking about follow the money. Figure out where these big companies want to get money from, what their strategy is going to be over the next 5 or 10 years. And I think sometimes it's easy to get caught up with this is the issue of today. Everyone's talking about Meta, everyone's talking about news, everyone's talking about the media code. When one of the things that Ricky does really well and one of the things that I'm always trying to think of is how can we actually play this out over the next 5 to 10 years, because that's really important. And in that context, the idea of AI in publishing is probably the biggest issue that all these companies, so from Meta to Google to Amazon to Microsoft, they're trying to figure out how can they win that battle, which is going to be the battle of the next generation. What we need to make sure is that news and democracy and publishing is not collateral damage as they try and figure that out. And so one of the best ways of doing that is trying to work with some of these big companies to have conversations with the Microsofts of the world, with Google, which I have conversation with them every week around some of these topics, on how we can work towards what their ultimate game is, try to have some alignment so that we can survive through the next short-term pain in order to get and help some of their vision in the long term.
You said you were an optimist at the start. I too am an optimist. It seems like there are some opportunities here in this, and there kind of has to be some opportunities in all of this. What's your ideal outcome? Like, what does utopia look like here? Does it exist?
Yeah, I'm an optimist and a realist together. And
the tension is real.
Yeah, it is. The tension is real between being an optimist and a realist. I am optimistic about this for a couple of reasons. One, I've been in the industry long enough to see ups and downs and see different platforms come and go and algorithms rise and fall. So I do have faith in the ups and downs of business to eventually sort themselves out. Secondly, I have faith that good content will always find an audience. So there's always a way. The third is that I actually, despite any political beliefs left, right, or center, I do really have faith in our Australian government. We generally have relatively good interventionist policy around this area because it is a really important area. And I'm very glad that we live and operate in Australia, because I think that is a real benefit when it comes to this. The News Media Code was a clumsy attempt at trying to solve this complicated issue. And whether it continues or survives, who knows? But based on lots of conversations with government at the moment, where we're really trying to, on behalf of the DPA, trying to get our message heard that independence can't be forgotten in this, I have some optimism when I leave those conversations that we will have some good government policy to help and protect our industry.
Yeah, those are three really good points. What would you say to people listening? What should they do?
I think right now, whilst we all still have access to Meta and to Facebook and Instagram to get your news, I think if you enjoy a news outlet on there, go to their page, go to their homepage and see what they're asking you to do to help build their audiences outside of these platforms. So a lot of publishers right now are saying, join me on Substack, join our newsletter over here, subscribe to our podcast, give us 5 stars, whatever it is. Right now, whilst you still have the ability to do this, because Meta could come out next week and we might be having this conversation and say, right, from the 1st of April, news is banned. That's what they did in Canada. So I just think right now, whilst you still can, please go to the media titles that you love, big or small, media agnostic here, and help support them in other ways. And the second thing I think is just to be engaged in this issue. And I actually put the question back to you, Kate, and you're an independent media publisher. What can the audience do to help support you during this time in case you do get banned on Instagram and Facebook?
I mean, for us, it's the same as everyone else. We're in a lucky position that we don't rely on Meta for an immediate revenue line. However, we rely on it to out the word out about who we are, signing up to the newsletter, following our podcast, but more importantly, sharing them, encouraging others to do so. That's the most important thing. And I want to add also, we've been thinking for a long time about what we can do to contribute to a healthy, informed population. And because of our concern for the future of news and information, we actually have a media literacy program being completed by thousands of schools as we speak called NewsHounds. It's part of Squiz Kids. We're trying to get that program government funded at the moment, or potentially privately funded, so that all schools have access to it. If anyone out there is interested in NewsHounds, in media literacy, get in touch. If you have creative ideas about how you can help in that mission, we're certainly keen to hear from you.
I think Squiz Kids is one of the best initiatives that I've heard of on how to help address this issue at the core, which is the next generation coming through. Because if we don't have media literacy for that generation, and there's worlds in which media platforms like Meta throw their weight around to ban news on platforms, what hope do we have? We will just have a dumbed down, uninformed generation coming through.
Can we talk about your book now, though? Please.
We sure can.
I haven't read it yet. I'm apparently going to the launch.
You are going to the launch, and that is the launch date. So it's actually not out yet. It comes out in a few weeks' time.
I'm off the hook. But does it have any relevancy to this conversation, or is it completely different?
It is a completely different topic, but it's something I've been really interested in for the last couple of years, which is the future of how and why we work. I have been fascinated by this kind of question and concept of how we work ever since COVID in particular in 2020. And so for the past 2 years, I have been speaking with researchers around the world, traveling the world to try and figure out how we can fix a broken work system. Because most of the research that I found was that a lot of people are disengaged. A lot of people were apprehensive about the future with AI. And there's a lot of problems with the way that we're working. And so I wanted to figure out how can we fix it?
I'm sure you're not going to tell me the answer.
Well, it's in the book.
I've got to read it to find out, don't I?
I've got a simple framework that I would love to talk to you about, but I fear we might be running out of time here.
Let's save it for another time. I run a huge risk in quoting Michael Miller at the end of this conversation, but I think in one of his op-eds this week, he reminded everyone that if they can do this for news, they can do it for anything. And I feel like it might be a good final thought.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that as a thought. But the idea that we have given so much power to these large platforms on the expectation that they will do good and that they will have our best interest at heart, and then you realize that, oh, shit, we are actually at their mercy, and this is one example of that. I think that's a really interesting last thought.
Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. News Club is the place to go for conversations about the news. Claire and I will be back on the weekly wrap tomorrow. It's the week in news and what's coming up. Our topic for News Club next week is still up for debate, but we reckon, sort of in this vein, that image of Kate Middleton is a strong contender. Thanks for listening, and we'll chat to you tomorrow. Before we get into what might be in the news next week, a message from our podcast advertiser, BHP. This week, they're keen to share with Squizzers how the resources they mine are key to the energy transition to renewable energy.
Yeah, we often hear about the push towards renewable energy, but what doesn't get as much attention is the role resources play in making that transition possible. Take steel, for instance. It's a key material used in the construction of renewable energy infrastructure, as well as in bridges, transportation, hospitals, and schools. And a big part of it comes from iron ore.
BHP says the importance of responsibly produced Australian iron ore is clear.
And by that, they mean reducing the greenhouse gas emissions associated with iron ore production. It's why BHP has committed to a solar and battery agreement to help power their port facilities at Port Hedland.
It's happening now at BHP. And if you want to learn more, visit bhp.com/critical. You'll find that link in your episode notes. Kate Watson, co-host of News Club and The Weekly Wrap, jumping in here to say thank you for listening to our podcasts first and foremost. And if you like them, we'd really appreciate it if you could share them. Tell your mates about us. Tell your family. Tell your barista. Tell your hairdresser. Whoever you think might be interested in the news that we cover. You telling people about us is still the number one way we grow. Thanks in advance.